Next.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. After months of headlines about the New Hampshire House, the state Senate is now taking its turn in the spotlight. In recent weeks, senators have been plowing through hundreds of bills which the House passed earlier this year. And when the Senate convenes tomorrow morning, it'll consider many more. Two bills on the docket for this week concern health care. One is aimed at blocking the path of the new federal health care law here in New Hampshire. Another would establish an interstate health care compact. Both measures were high priority for House leadership, but both have faced opposition in the Senate. Also, senators this week will look at a proposal to lower business taxes by exempting more firms from the business enterprise tax. But this measure, too, has faced Senate skepticism over concerns that it could blow too large a hole in the state budget. If these measures are rejected, it could further poison the well between the House and Senate, both bodies controlled by large Republican majorities, but lately demonstrating very different governing and political philosophies. Today in The Exchange, the status at the State House, what may come out of the legislature in the end, as lawmakers hope to wind up their work with an eye toward this fall's elections. Let's hear from you this hour. What bills do you hope make it through the State House this year, and which would you like to see fail? How will this legislative session affect the way you vote in the fall? Give us a call. Tell us what you think. The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Our guests are Anne-Marie Timmons. She's a reporter for the Concord Monitor. She covers the State House, among other beats. And Anne-Marie, nice to see you. Welcome back.
Thank you, Laura.
Also with us, Norma Love, State House reporter for the Associated Press. And Norma, good to see you, too.
Hello, Laura.
And Kevin Landergan is here, State House reporter for the Telegraph of Nashua, also a columnist for thelobbynh.com. And Kevin, thanks for taking the time today.
Great to be back, Laura.
Well, and Kevin, but all of you, where are we at this point in the legislative session in terms of who's steering the ship, what's on the agenda?
You know, we just had the Kentucky Derby, and we're really at like the three-quarter pole in the race where there's a lot of jockeying that goes on in the middle of the race. Horses and jockeys get aggressive with one another, and then the field starts to thin out, and that's what's happening now. The field is thinning out in both the House and the Senate, as we'll talk about today. A number of alarming bills, very controversial bills, have either been killed, tabled, or neutered by the other body. And by the end of this week, all committees from one branch have to complete work on the bills from the other branch. So we're approaching that ultimate point that's very key in any session.
Wow. All committees have to complete their work by the end of the week. And then there are full votes on the floor of the House and the Senate, and then they have to try and reach some sort of compromise on these measures.
That's right.
Norma.
Well, I think at this point, Kevin's pointed out quite clearly, at the end of a second year of a session, people aren't happy with one another. You killed my bill. Why did you do that? Okay, maybe next year I'll get it. Well, with the end, that's the end of the second year. And there are a lot of hard feelings. But this year in particular, I think there's a little bit more, I don't know, ugliness between the two chambers, a little bit more assertiveness, aggressiveness. And I think there's a lot of unhappiness in the House in particular because the Senate has taken a lot of the favored bills in the House and sent them to what? A polite death. They've tabled them and told us they're not coming off, or they sent them to quote-unquote interim study, which in the Senate is another form of polite death because with 24 senators, they rarely study anything. So there's a lot of, okay, you did that to me. I'm going to find a bill you want and sent to the House, and I'm going to stick my favorite bill back on your favorite bill. A good example of this was a business bill that the Senate wanted. It was sent to the House, and they put the Senate had killed a bill in requiring women to wait 24 hours before getting an abortion. Well, it's now on the business bill. So when it comes back to the Senate, we're expecting the Senate to what they call non-concur, basically say, no, we're not taking it and kill it. And it's that kind of back and forth. But as Kevin says, it'll thin out, and at some point, the Republican majorities in both sides are going to have to decide what they want to campaign on in the fall and come to some consensus on some bills that they both agree on and pass.
Yeah, and right now, bills they both agree on seem in short supply. What's your perspective, Anne-Marie?
I think the folks that I'm hearing from that are most agitated about bills being killed are freshmen House members who maybe haven't been through this before, even though they were there last session, sort of don't understand, have a longer view, maybe think they're there for 2 years, that's it, or just don't have that history to understand that this part of this is a relationship that you build. And those are the folks I'm most hearing from who are led the effort last time we saw to sort of put these unlikely bills together to get back at the other side.
So a huge freshman majority, especially in the House, Anne Marie, saying, look, we were elected to do these things, and, mm-hmm. and come on, Senate, let us do it.
Yeah.
Well, they don't recognize that it takes two chambers and the governor sometimes. And, it's like Anne Marie said, it's a little bit of being naive. It's a little bit of being just principled, very, very adamantly. This is what we were here to do. But the Republican majorities keep coming back to the fact that they were elected not to pass taxes, to put out bills that would help improve the economy and business. And I think the Senate has taken that a little bit more to heart than the House, at least the groups, the kinds of bills we've seen make headlines lately. For example, the House has passed abortion limits on adults for the first time ever. That just never happened before. They've sent them over to the Senate, which is saying, we don't want to campaign on this. We want to campaign on what we campaigned on last time.
And what's really interesting is that we have these historic supermajorities, over 3-1 in both the House and the Senate, first time. That big a majority, first time in almost 100 years. And I think I started out, certainly, this two-year session essentially feeling, well, this will change the paradigm. Like Norma said, by the end of the two-year session, the House hates the Senate hates the House, but they've got mutual assured destruction. And by that I mean when you have a 3-1 supermajority, if one body acts on your bill and kills it, then you can easily marshal the forces to undo that or put it onto another bill. So that'll limit that kind of shenanigans. And obviously I was wrong because we've seen those kind of shenanigans occur and in greater number this time than in most sessions.
Well, our phone number here in the exchange for you to join us with your questions and comments about the many bills that have bounced back and forth that we've been hearing about for the past many months is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. You can email us, exchange@nhpr.org. Also, the exchange is now on Facebook, so we hope you'll go to our page, join the conversation there. Give us a call. What do you think about some of the bills that have been especially hotly debated in the House and Senate? Which bills do you hope make it through the State House by the time the session is over, and which would you like to see fail? Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. And Kevin, as we've been saying, the headlines have been all about the no's coming from the State Senate as it rejects bill after bill after bill from the House. Has the Senate said yes to anything?
Not a real lot, but they certainly the school building aid program looks as if that's something that's going to happen. That's significant. Before, it was an entitlement, meaning every district got in line and eventually got a school construction grant. Now they're going to be put on lists of priorities. The state of Maine does this now. A moratorium that has been in place for a couple of years will be lifted. That's a significant change. I think another big change that's probably going to occur is this education tax credit. It's not a voucher, but it's a way around a voucher to get support for parents who want to send their children to an alternative public school or a private school. A business that makes donations will get a significant tax credit if they contribute to these kinds of scholarships.
And we did a program on that if people want to find out more. And that, yes. You say, Kevin, will probably make it through both.
Yes.
Now, how does Governor Lynch feel about that? We haven't talked about him yet.
Yeah, we haven't heard as yet. He hasn't spoken about the bill. He's been against vouchers in the past. This is a constitutional alternative. It's in place in 9 states, including Rhode Island, and 3 federal courts have ruled this kind of tax credit scheme is constitutional. I'm not sure it's going to be enough to get Governor Lynch's support, however.
Norma, has the state Senate said yes to anything else?
Well, I was just going to comment on the building aid bill. Lynch did send a letter of support to the Senate's version of that. I would like to point out one of the things he's wanted all along is to target aid, and this would limit aid. Certainly, it would honor all the previous commitments the state has made. So there wouldn't be a lot of money available at the outset. But one thing it doesn't do is set your priority according to the wealth of the community, which I thought was what they wanted to do. So it still has some things to be worked out. Other things that they've passed, I think the internet tax ban. there was some auditing being done. There was some confusion out there whether particularly wireless carriers or Comcast, Verizon, if you were going to be charged on data plans, and it depended on whether you broke out your company broke it out into the voice versus the data, whether you were taxed. So some were being audited and being saying, hey, you have to pay the tax because you do or you don't. So the Senate came up with a bill that amended it onto a House bill to say, no, we don't want this to happen. You can continue taxing, you know, two-way communications, your telephone calls, but not your data. And that's going back to the House. It does have a little twist to it that we aren't sure how the House is going to react, and that is that the House wanted to put, and this was Speaker O'Brien, wanted to put $16 million of surplus into the state savings account. The Senate is saying, yeah, we've got some costs coming along. We aren't sure that we can afford to do that. So it doesn't do that. So that's probably going to go to a conference committee.
Interesting. And Anne-Marie, one of the biggest no's that the state Senate has made towards the House, you have covered, and that's the gun bills. Though that has been a loud, resounding no, and a lot of people in the House are upset.
Yes. Early in the session, one of the senators on the Judiciary Committee that was hearing these bills said, you know, there's just so much of an appetite in the Senate for gun bills. They got Stand Your Ground last year, and that was going to be it. And I think we've seen that. We've seen bills go down that would have allowed loaded guns and crossbows in vehicles, concealed guns without permits, allowing guns on college campuses. Things that had real support in the House, they just didn't even want to pay that much attention to it in the Senate. So they not only killed it, they did it kind of quickly and quietly.
And will there be a payback for those senators who, for the first time, some of them voted against gun bills?
We saw Senator Barnes and Senator Carson take time at last session to stand up after the session had ended to explain why they voted down the last bill that would have allowed permitless carry, and they said the spate of violence we've had in this state, it's just time to take a pause and think about what we're doing.
All right. Well, we will talk about many more bills after a short break and take your phone calls at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR.
Good morning, it's 9:19, and support for NHPR comes from UR members and from the NEEP Network Organizations, a statewide leader assisting students and parents planning for college. Information at nhheaf.org. From Wilson Employment Network, successfully impacting their clients' productivity by recruiting qualified talent for New Hampshire employers for over 12 years, online at wilsonemployment.com. And from Sullivan Hollis, providing effective representation for estate planning, domestic relations, and family-owned businesses throughout New Hampshire. More of our State House update on the Exchange on NHPR and a 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, what the French and Greek election results mean for the European economic unity. New Hampshire weather today, cloudy with occasional rain, cooler temperatures, highs from 50 to 55 degrees. Tonight, cloudy, a chance of showers, lows in the 40s. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, a chance of a few showers, high temperatures in the 60s. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's a State House update, and we're looking at growing friction between the State House and State Senate, and how State House politics may affect this fall's elections. We invite you to join us, 1-800-892-6477, as we look at the many proposals that have come up in the legislature this year and the back and forth between the House and Senate. Which bills do you hope make it through in the end? Which would you like to see fail? Also, if you're watching this year's legislative session, how's it going to affect the way you vote in the fall? Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Also, we're on Facebook. Go to our page, join the conversation there. And Norma Love, before we go to the callers, Anne-Marie Timmons was just talking before the break how one of the loudest and most controversial no's from the state Senate this year has been on this raft of gun bills that we've seen. What do you think? Are these going to come back in any way, shape, or form, or are these done?
I think the bills are done for this session. I think that was clear when they tabled the bill last week on concealed weapons permits, which basically says you don't have to go to your police chief in your town and ask permission to carry a gun concealed. You can if you wanted to. And the Senate had that bill last year, and they held it over, and then they sent it to study, and then they got the House said, well, did you really mean it? And they sent him another one, and I guess they really meant it. There were some problems with the bill. It basically had a clause in there that said if you were a felon or if you were under 18, you could possess a gun at home or at your place of office. How you would drive it back and forth, I don't know, because there were other prohibitions. So there was some conflict with federal law, and I think people looked at it and said, you know, the police chief in Greenland just got killed. Police officer in Manchester just got shot. We've had other officers wounded. We've had all these domestic violence cases. We've had the situation in Florida. This isn't a good time. And I think there was some politics there. If we're going to campaign in the fall, we don't want to be campaigning that we encouraged anything that would harm police, that would encourage violence. And I think that's what happened. And I don't expect it to come back, even if the House tries.
Our phone number again here on The Exchange as we look at all the issues before the State House this session is 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, let's go to the calls. And John's calling in from Dover. Hi, John. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, I'm happy to be there. Your panelists might recognize me as Rod Paul from years ago. I was a reporter at the State House.
Oh, for which publication?
The Concord Monitor.
Okay, great. Go ahead, John.
My question is, who are the powerful lobbyists there, and to what effect are those lobbyists affecting things at this point in the session?
You know, it's a great question, John. Thanks. And Kevin, go ahead.
Yeah, good to hear from you. This is Kevin Landrigan. There are a number of very powerful lobbyists, some who represent up to 15, sometimes even 20 interests. Many of them are former legislators. Former Senate President Ed DuPont is a very significant lobbyist, former state representative. He was a Republican. Former state representative Jim Demers, former congressional candidate. He runs the Demers Group. He represents a number of interests as well. What's interesting about the question is, why do you hire a lobbyist? And 85% of the time, you hire a lobbyist not to pass something, but to kill something.
Really?
And this is why lobbyists are extremely influential in a session such as this. Because even with a 3-to-1 Republican majority in one branch, if they pass the bill, you can foster unrest and discord in the other branch and try and kill the bill or amend the bill or send the bill, as Norma pointed out, these various parliamentary ways to politely kill something. So lobbyists can be very influential in a session like this, and we've seen that they are.
Well, and John, it's a great question. And, you know, all of you, our image of the New Hampshire legislature is it's these hardworking citizen lawmakers who basically are volunteers. You know, they get $100 a year. And we don't think about lobbyists roaming the hallways. But Emery, John's right. There is a big influence of lobbyists, national lobbyists, not just our own state interests.
What I've seen in covering the abortion bills, the contraception bills, is just a huge constant presence from Planned Parenthood and NARAL Pro-Choice New Hampshire. They've had a lot of bills to work on this session, and they have made calls to, you know, all the senators, especially. I think that's where they recognized they had to fight their fight, and they've organized phone banks, and they've been a constant presence at the State House this year, and I think they've been effective in killing a lot of this legislation.
Norma?
I think another one we can't leave out of the in the right to work issue are the unions. I mean, the unions are very effective organizers. They get the people there. They rally. Last year, it was almost perceived as a union rally outside the State House the day the House voted on the budget, but it actually included a lot of the social program, I don't want to say lobbyists, but the nonprofits had gotten people there who were protesting some of the cuts. But you get people there, they line the halls, you're coming in, you've got the signs out front. It may not make a huge difference on some, but if you have somebody who's waffling, it might change a vote. And as we saw in some of the cases, like with the abortion bills, as I said, you had the contraceptive issue. You had women who did not want their access to contraceptives cut off in any way. And I think that was an issue that resonated more in the Senate, where they said, you know, as I said earlier, we don't want to have to campaign against women on this.
Yeah, the fall elections kind of overshadowing a lot of the choices that people are making. Kevin?
Yeah, I just wanted to say on the abortion issue, as Anne Marie pointed out, Planned Parenthood is really organized, very politically savvy organization. And they understood early on in this session, we're outgunned, meaning the House is going to pass a raft of these abortion bills. So what did they do? They hired a lobbyist, Dr. Lisa Shapiro, who's with the Chris Gallagher firm, one of the big super lobbying firms, Paul Wolfowitz, Don Funstein, Eric Taylor, Chris Gallagher, one of the best there is. And Dr. Shapiro is chairman of the Retirement System Board of Trustees, has a lot of support and a lot of respect in the state Senate, and she's been very effective in neutering, if not killing, a number of those abortion bills.
Well, and it's interesting. Anne-Marie and Norma mentioned lobbyists more seen with the left wing of politics. What about the right wing of politics, Kevin? The National Rifle Association, the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, the business-backed group. How active have those lobbyists been in our state house this year?
Oh, very active. And they recognize that with the tsunami that happened in 2010, the opportunities for advocacy, for actually bringing things about, increased substantially. Things such as the healthcare compact, in which there are seven states now, which are states are trying on a conservative bent, and ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, has put model legislation together, which would allow all these like-minded states to ask Congress to let us out of the restrictions under Medicare and Medicaid, let us construct our own healthcare insurance plans for the poor and for seniors. And they have some very gifted grassroots lobbyists, Matt Murphy, Corey Lewandowski with the state chapter for Americans for Prosperity. And they were able to get not only the House to overwhelmingly pass it, but the Senate Majority Leader, Jeb Bradley, to co-sponsor it. But now we're seeing, once again, the governor's dead set against this bill, doesn't like this bill, probably would veto it. And it's the issue is running out of steam and looks like it's going to get sent to study this week by the Senate.
Well, John, thanks for the call. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Join us as we look at some of the key bills that have been going back and forth between the House and the Senate this year. The House sent a lot over to the Senate a couple weeks ago. The Senate has said no to much of what the House has sent over. Give us a call. Which bills do you hope make it through in the end at the State House? And which would you like to see not make it through? Also, how will all the doings at the State House this spring affect the way that you vote in the fall? You can call us at 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And I know, Emory, you want to jump in there on something Kevin said as well.
I just wanted to add, one thing that surprised me about the gun lobby was that it was so... It wasn't one voice. There was a lot of arguing in amongst the different groups, which I didn't appreciate. And I think people think of the gun lobby as one voice, and it wasn't. And that actually gave the Senate a little bit of cover on this last bill because they said, listen, we can't even get agreement from all the folks who want restrictions lifted on gun ownership and concealed carry. And I think that was... one reason gun bills were easily killed in the Senate this year.
Go ahead, Norma.
I think I just wanted to circle back to what Kevin said, and that is there's a sense of urgency because we had this supermajority elected, but everyone expects the pendulum to swing back somewhat and the Democrats to pick up some seats, which will, who knows how many, but it could make it either impossible or much more difficult to get these kinds of bills through next year.
Kevin, I wanted to ask you about health care because that's come up a lot this year, too. And some of the bills, not all, but some of them have dealt with how the state should respond to President Obama's Affordable Care Act, the new health care law. How have some New Hampshire Republicans hoped to change the way this law is felt here in New Hampshire, maybe hoping that it isn't felt at all?
Yeah, you know, House Speaker Bill O'Brien, who's a new speaker, and as Norma pointed out, it aptly describes him, very aggressive, very anxious, almost very impatient, and very interested, as much as any legislator in the country, to lead the charge against Obamacare in a state house.
What they call Obamacare.
Exactly, the Affordable Care Act and the mandate that eventually by 2014 all would have to purchase health insurance. The other thing about the Affordable Care Act is it not only expands eligibility under Medicaid, it requires all states to set up exchanges to provide health insurance to all groups that have a subsidy from the government. That would include folks who are on Medicaid. It would also include children who are on the very popular Healthy Kids program here in New Hampshire, which is getting folded into Medicaid. Now, the federal law makes available to states significant sums of money to plan for these health care exchanges. There are only two states in the country that have not taken the money, New Hampshire and Utah, two very conservative, very Republican, very anti-Obama states. And Speaker O'Brien has taken it as a crusade, really, is to not only not accept the money, but actually pass legislation to prevent the insurance commissioner from cooperating with the federal government when it tries to set up its own exchange. Because the federal law is clear. States, if you don't set up exchanges, Washington will come in and do it for you. Now, once again, the state Senate has basically said, it's too late now for us to even use the planning monies, so we don't need this bill. And by the way, the Affordable Care Act is up before the U.S. Supreme Court, and some portions of it could be declared unconstitutional. So let's not pass anything about health care exchanges and see what the landscape looks like after the nine justices issue a ruling.
So after all the conversation about this on the House side, the Senate kind of said, nah, and they did one of those polite deaths that Norma talked about earlier.
Exactly.
Let's take some more calls. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Claire's waiting in Hollis. Hi, Claire. Thanks for joining us. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you. My concern is that people vote for who they either have name recognition or they vote on a neighbor, you know, someone that they know. And once they're in, you don't really get the voting record unless you do a very tedious search. And so my question is, why can't we have a program or something that actually lets ordinary people get the voting records of their district legislatures?
You know, Claire, it's a great question. Thank you. Anybody? Anne-Marie? Norma? Anne-Marie, go ahead.
It's a little easier to track an individual legislator's record if you go on to the legislative website and click on the person's name. You can track their voting record without having to check each bill. And there's links there that will take you to the bill once you have the number, so you have a sense. It does require some internet searching. And also, I think newspapers try to include their local representatives' votes on big bills. It's not possible for everyone because we have, you know, hundreds and hundreds of bills. But I would encourage people to go onto the state's website and look at that voting record.
Norma.
We get books. They print books. They sell them. They probably have them in the library where they have the legislature and they have their voting record for that, you know, what issues and where they've stood in the past sessions.
Yeah, so it's the general court, basically. We won't give out website addresses and stuff here, but basically, Anne-Marie, you go on the general court website and you can track individual legislators.
Right.
Yeah. Kevin?
Yes. And it's upgraded. It's better than it used to be, certainly. It's a lot easier. But it is cumbersome, and it requires a certain amount of searching that has to occur. And we've been looking at that at the Telegraph. Can we develop a program? Claire's question is a very good one. And I think we can do more in the media to make this information more accessible and easily searchable from legislator to legislator.
All right. Well, and Claire, thank you for joining us. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And up next is Dan in Concord. Hi, Dan. You're on the Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. Regarding the gun question you were mentioning before, there's not a lot of consensus. And I was speaking with local radio personality Peter St. James about this very fact the other day. You know, he's an avid hunter and gun owner, as I am. And he is what I would consider someone who's reasonable about the issue. I think we have it pretty easy in New Hampshire with access to guns. You know, people who need them can get them. I don't think we need to go making a lot of laws to make it even easier. I have a feeling that most people who have firearms for specific purposes, like hunting, or maybe they're a competitive shooter, or certainly law enforcement and military personnel, they have access to guns, but there's an increasingly growing number of citizens who seem to have them just because they can, and that worries me.
So, Dan, as an avid hunter and gun owner, as you describe yourself, how do you feel about the fact that the Senate has said no to these expanded gun rights bills from the House?
Well, I feel fine with it. I mean, you know, I had to take a hunter safety course, which included a heavy firearm safety component, and not everyone who goes out to buy a gun gets that unless they are specifically getting their hunting license. I'd like to see some sort of mandatory firearms training for anyone who purchases a gun.
Okay. Dan, thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate it. Again, our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. And here's an email from Matt in Deerfield. He says, let's not forget that I couldn't surf the web during this year's gay marriage debate without seeing hateful ads from the National Organization for Marriage. Norma, remind us what happened with this. This is a couple months back, but remind us what happened with this gay marriage debate. This didn't even make it to the Senate.
No, It was a bill that was filed last year and held over because the leadership in the House felt that they should focus on the budget. So they held the debate over till this year. And it was a bill that would have reinstituted civil unions, but not in a way that people were used to. And then the sponsor came in with when that didn't have support, came in with an amendment that tried to turn the clock back to pre-gay marriage. But by then, the opponents of the bill had locked up a considerable number of votes in the House. There were a lot of people who felt it was going to be vetoed. It wasn't going to be overridden. They were going to be spending a lot of their time on something that wasn't going anywhere. I think the Senate was, you know, blowing out a big whew when it found
they
out.
They didn't want to deal
no,
with it.
No, because it's the kind of thing that even if it had passed and then you'd have to have it on veto day. If it had passed all the way through, then it would have gone to the court, and then it would have been this hue and cry during the election. And I don't think they wanted that. So it had people who voted against it who said, you know what, yeah, let's wait. Maybe we'll have a Republican governor next time. We'll only need a majority. You had people voting against it who didn't want it at all, people voting against it because they felt that it would have turned the clock back. Then you would have had this group of people who were grandfathered in, which means they were allowed, gay people who were allowed to be married, but then no one else. So I think it just went down. And the key vote, ironically, was a non-roll call vote that was on whether they should divide the question to separate out a referendum that some of the people didn't want.
All right. We will leave it at that. Thanks for the email, Matt. And we'll take more of your emails at exchange@nhpr.org and your calls, 1-800-892-6477. We'll be back in a minute.
Today on Word of Mouth, take me out to the ancient ball game. From China to Rome, anthropologists look at the origin of organized sport. Plus, sci-fi biology, how a cognitive brain scientist becomes a leading zombie expert, looking at real-life examples of mind-controlling parasites and fungi. I'm Brady Carlson. Virginia Prescott is back for more Word of Mouth, today at noon and again at 9 on NHPR.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Grupponi Auto Group. Featuring multiple lines of fuel-efficient, environmentally friendly cars at Grupponi Auto Junction in Bow and online 24 hours a day at Grupponi.com. And from Company C, creating lifestyle of colorful living with brightly colored area rugs, bedding, furniture, and home accents. Retail store in Concord and online at CompanyC.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, battles over bottled water as some communities look to ban this product. Email us your thoughts before the program at exchange@nhpr.org. And be sure to join us tomorrow morning, live at 9. Today in The Exchange, it's a State House update, and you can join us with your questions and comments about the many bills that have moved over from the House to the State Senate, how the State Senate has rejected many of those. Tell us what bills you hope make it through the State House this year and which ones you would like to see fail. In a minute, we'll talk about elections, too, this fall. How will the tone and issues in this legislative session affect the way that you vote in the fall? Join us with your phone calls, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. And we're now on Facebook, so you can go to our page and join the conversation there. And before we go back to our listeners, all of you, there was one more healthcare bill that I wanted to touch on just briefly, Anne-Marie Timmons. And it's very detailed, but it's very, an important issue, I think. It has to do with something called the Certificate of Need Board, and a big debate this year over whether we even need a Certificate of Need Board. Can you just really quickly, Emery, remind us what this is all about?
This is a board made up of largely members from the hospital and insurance industry. The three or five people positions actually are vacant, so it really is an industry-minded board.
You mean citizen positions.
Yes. And they're tasked with deciding whether any new hospital or any large expansion or big purchase of a big equipment purchase is needed in the state. And so hospitals need to go before this board to get the permission. And the complaint, sort of agreed on by everyone, is that it's not quite right, that the industry is policing itself. And the thinking is keeping competition out. So there was an effort this year in the House to repeal that. And a House Health and Human Services Committee ultimately decided, you know, a full repeal is never going to pass the Senate. So let's try to tweak the board and make it a little fairer, change the membership, adjust sort of their scope of review. And that made it over to the Senate, and it's now tabled. The full House overturned that committee report and went back to a full repeal. And that full repeal went to the Senate. And as the committee predicted, it's not sitting well with the Senate. And they have tabled it for the time being. I don't know if that will come off or not. I think it's possible, but not as a full repeal.
And this is something, Norma, that the State Hospital Association was involved in, right?
Well, I haven't followed as closely as Anne Marie, but I think one thing that's happened with the bill is they've now taken pieces of what she's talking about and put it on another bill, which is on the table, but is supposed to come off.
Wow. I just don't know how you all keep track of this.
Well,
the bills get broken up and a piece is added here and added here. I thought only Congress did that.
They had this bill. Speaker O'Brien wanted to allow this Cancer Center of America to come in and have a lot of exemptions from some state rules and laws. And so that bill came over, and that's on the table along with the one with the Certificate of Need. So they're probably going to leave the Cancer Center on the table but take pieces of it and put it on the Certificate of Need and bring it back off. And it would be more restrictions on the cancer centers and I think kind of what she was talking about a minute ago, a phase-in, phase-out for the Certificate of Need Board. So that's probably going to come off the table. But whether it survives over in the House, again, is anybody's question.
Yeah, and we talked about the power of lobbies earlier with Rod's very good question. The New Hampshire Hospital Association is one of the most powerful lobbying groups in the state. They have enormous influence, particularly in the Senate, but also in the House. And they're not a monolithic group. There's a lot of disagreement among the hospitals, but there is unanimity with the organization right now that the time is not right to fully repeal Certificate of Need. They have some problems with the process, but they don't think the Certificate of Need full repeal should pass. Now, how powerful are they? Well, House Speaker Bill O'Brien wants to bring this in this cancer center. In order to make it palatable, this cancer center's requirements to be free of real regulation, to be free from going to the Certificate of Need Board, 65% of the patients would have to come from outside the state of New Hampshire. Why? Because then they wouldn't compete with the existing hospitals. It would be more palatable to the hospital association. As it happens, the hospital association still opposes this bill. Why? Because the specialty care hospital would get a full break from the Medicaid enhancement tax, a $3.5 to $5 million annual tax break.
And what's the justification for that? I mean, you know, the hospital association, you can kind of see their point. I mean, they have to pay the taxes. Why shouldn't this cancer hospital have to pay it?
You do. They point out some things. One, this would be a private entity that would pay property taxes. A number of nonprofit hospitals operate in this state and pay less or very little in property taxes. The other is much like in other debates we've had in terms of luring. How do you lure state-of-the-art businesses to your state? You have to offer trinkets to them. And the Cancer Center of America has been very successful going to states and working sweetheart deals. They did it in Georgia. They did it in Pennsylvania. And they're trying to do it here.
Anne-Marie, real quick.
And the center will also argue that they don't take Medicaid patients, although they do in Georgia. So
All right. Well, we'll leave that one on the table, but that might be worth exploring down the line. It seems like there's a lot of philosophies going on here about free markets and healthcare and how that healthcare often doesn't work in a free market way. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Join us as we look at all the issues that have been before the State House this year. Which issues have caught your attention? Which bills you hope make it in the final end of the session, and which ones you hope fail somewhere along the way. Also, I want to turn our attention now to how the session this year may affect this fall's elections. Join us with your thoughts on that at 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Norma Love, so let's look ahead to the fall elections. What are some of the talking points that you think members of the House will make, first of all, as they approach their reelection bids?
Well, I think the House Republicans will certainly point to the fact that they passed a budget that had cuts in it, no taxes, no fees, no fee increases. I think they're going to look at that. But the social conservatives are going to play a role here. They're going to want to say, look, we matter. And some of you didn't help us out. You didn't help us get the bills that we thought were important through.
In the Senate.
Yeah, especially in the Senate. But also there were some fights in the House. I think the Senate's probably going to try and focus on some business changes, the internet tax ban, some business tax credit type bills that they tried to get through and may still get through. The Democrats, on the other hand, are going to say, look what these people did. They cut the budget. They cut social programs. They passed down costs to communities. They said they didn't, but they really did. They tried to take contraceptives away from women. They did these things. They tried to change Medicare, Medicaid through these compacts so that the seniors wouldn't necessarily have the same coverage. That's what I'm hearing. You're hearing from the Democrats. They're gonna point to all those things that they say were too radical for you. And I think there's going to be the Democrats are much more energized right now than they have been. They were last time. And some of these issues have energized them. Whether it'll make a difference over pocketbook issues, it may if the races are close.
Well, I also wonder how closely most people pay attention to, especially what their House members are doing. How many people, Amory, even know who their House member is?
I think that's a good question. And I think this goes back to Claire's question earlier. I think it's really incumbent upon the media to parse out how people have voted and make their own legislator known to their readers. And it's not enough to just vote for someone because they have an R after their name or a D. And I think it's our job to make clear how the voting record is, because simply saying someone's a Republican or a Democrat isn't enough, I think.
Well, and it does make you wonder whether people are just checking that RD box or whether they are paying attention to that individual person, especially when there are 400 of them.
Right.
It is hard to keep track,
right,
as Claire mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you have anywhere from 25% to 35% of voters in November that vote every 4 years. This is their opportunity. So many of them are really tuned out to state politics. They care about presidential politics. And we no longer have straight ticket voting. So if that disinterested or relatively uninformed voter doesn't go all the way down the ballot, then those races are left blank. To Anne Marie's point, I think, too, our job becomes even more challenging, if you will, because of what's happened on the landscape. Look at the state Senate. We have 7 incumbents not running for re-election. Now, it's not unheard of for the Senate to have a 1/3 turnover of its 24 members. But usually that's because the voters do that. The voters throw out 4 incumbents and they elect 4 new members. Here we have 7 incumbents who aren't running. And much like – and here's the problem Norma was talking about with regards to Republicans. Much like the Democrats on Capitol Hill, the Republicans in Concord are playing defense. Why? 6 of the 7 incumbents leaving are Republicans. And several of the Republicans who are leaving actually had their districts improved on the assumption they were going to run again. Now Republicans are scrambling less than a month before the candidate filing period opens to find quality candidates. The Democrats have been working for 2 years to identify good candidates for those seats, and in many cases they have.
So some of these announcements, Kevin, that these incumbent state senators won't run for re-election. Some of these announcements have been a surprise. The party has to go, whoa, who are we going to get for that district?
Yeah, I think it hasn't been a surprise. I think some of it is a reflection of what happened. When we elected 19 Republicans, many of them owning private businesses, and we had a very sluggish economy. And I got to tell you, a lot of these folks, they're hardworking. They're here for the right reason. They want to get something done. They want to get something accomplished. Most people who've not been in politics before have no clue how much work it is be a state senator, to serve on three, sometimes four committees, to have to be in the state house at least 4 days a week, sometimes working at this job 6 days a week. And many of the senators have been candid, saying, I've let my private business go. I've lost some contracts. I've had to make small layoffs. I've got to retool the business. I need to go back to it.
Norma.
And I think also it goes back to what we were talking about earlier about freshmen, and particularly in the House or freshmen in the Senate. They come in all charged up. We're going to do things. We're going to make great gains. And it just doesn't happen that way. I mean, even with the huge supermajorities, it takes time. And in all the years I've been covering the State House, even with the supermajorities under the Benson administration, it just didn't happen. Things don't – because you end up with coalitions within your party that don't agree, with the gun bills or on gay marriage or some of the others. And so what happens? You don't get what you thought you were going to get through, and you get frustrated. I spent all this time. My business is suffering. My family doesn't see me. And I didn't succeed. Do I want to stay another so many years to try and work this through? And on the chance that the pendulum won't swing so far back next time, that I'll have a shot.
You know, we haven't even talked about Governor Lynch, and certainly we've been focusing on the legislature. Anne-Marie, Governor's been quiet lately. Has he played a role in any of these debates recently?
Not to my eye. I mean, I haven't seen him working on issues in any sort of real way, in a public way, I should say. I don't know about behind the scenes. We'll call and get a comment on things, but we saw him come out ahead and say, yes, I will veto medical marijuana if you pass that. But I haven't seen that happen that often this year.
And I have noticed the same thing. Governor's been very – hear the crickets chirping sometimes in terms of the governor chiming in on these debates. But go ahead, Norma.
Well, there are private meetings. I mean,
I'm sure
they're going on all the time. It's just that the governor – it's a little known secret around the State House that the governor and the speaker just don't meet, don't talk. I mean, there's not a lot of love lost there. I mean, maybe publicly they'll say, yes, we're working together, but I don't think so.
And, Kevin, you were shaking your head. Is that – in the past, have the governor and speaker typically, you know, sat down once every 2 weeks and talked about things?
Well, it doesn't always happen. Even when they're of the same party, they just – personalities don't click. And even if the agendas are similar, someone might rub you the wrong way. John Lynch and Bill O'Brien couldn't be more different political figures. I mean, they have a very different governing style. They have a different approach. They have a different media management. And I think Bill O'Brien being as aggressive as sometimes confrontational House Speaker has put John Lynch off quite a bit. And now that John Lynch has decided not to run for election, as Norma pointed out, I have great relations in the Senate. I know a number of Republican senators like Senate President Peter Bragdon and Senator Bob O'Dell, the Republican from Leominster, I can talk with. And he's had, trust me, he's had a fair amount of influence in the Senate becoming the killing field that it has become for a lot of House priority bills.
So Governor Lynch, behind the scenes, perhaps has been working with some state senators who've said no to all these House bills.
Absolutely.
Norma.
Well, the senators aren't going to want to waste their political capital if he's going to veto a bill and it's going to go nowhere in the House or it's going to come back. And Reggie Repeal is a good example of that.
The Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative.
Yes. The House wanted to repeal Reggie. This went through last year. They didn't have the votes in the Senate. It's back this year as kind of the same bill that it was last year, which wouldn't take us out of Reggie unless two large New England states also got out. I don't know what the governor will do with that if it passes. But, I mean, the Senate doesn't want to take its time and say, hey, this is just not going anywhere. Let's focus on what is.
All of you, we haven't heard again in the major news, Governor Lynch playing a role. But Anne-Marie and Kevin and Norma, we have heard the gubernatorial candidates, on the Democratic side, two on the Republican side, chiming in a lot, right, Anne-Marie? I mean, they've really testified and they've been out there.
I've heard more from the Democrats on issues and more from Kevin Smith than I have heard from Ovid LaMontagne. That may just be a factor of where the Concord Monitor and we're considered more left-leaning. And we have heard them come out on, the Democrats especially, come out on almost every vote. We'll get a statement, even if it's not something you've expected them to be following.
Mm-hmm. Kevin.
Yeah, I think the Democratic candidates for governor feel like the Republican agenda is something that they can rally around, that they can build enthusiasm among the base for that message, and they've been very vocal. Ovid LaMontagne has tried to cast a different personality profile in House Speaker Bill O'Brien, more about a consensus builder. I think not to gloss over, but certainly to blur his very conservative past history.
Okay, well, all of you, this has been great. And we will be talking to you again as the elections heat up, probably. Anne-Marie Timmons, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Anne-Marie Timmons, reporter for the Concord Monitor, covering the State House, among other beats. Norma Love, great to see you. Thank you
great
for your time.
Great to see you, too.
Norma Love, State House reporter for the Associated Press. And Kevin Landrigan, thanks as always.
Thanks for having us, Laura.
Kevin Landrigan, State House reporter for the Telegraph of Nashua and columnist for TheLobbyNH.com. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our interns are Ryan Lassard and Tim Camerato. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange is now on Facebook. You can become a fan of our Facebook page where you can learn more about upcoming shows and get extra links and material. Our executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.